Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson, and this week we talk about two nuisance wolves near Glendon and what happened to them, new ANS regulations that North Dakota anglers might want to know about, muskies open up this weekend on Lake of the Woods. What will you need to bring to catch a giant? Joe Henry will let us know. Now, it may be the off-season right now for guys that like to carry shotguns, but that doesn't mean you can't get excited about waterfowl. Canada geese are either raising their young or flocking up with non-breeders and buzzing over. Mallards and teal are busy in the nests, and guys like Tony Crotty over here are painting decoys, tuning up mud motors, and gearing up for a season that's really only 2.5 months away. And Tony joins us now from Mid-Migration Outfitters in western Minnesota. Tony, with as hot and stormy as it has been lately, it's hard to think about. It's kind of hard to think about fall, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. The weather hasn't really been very fall-like, but we're starting to see some molt migrators moving and starting to see a lot of broods and a lot of little Canada geese walking around. So it's definitely, starting to get that feeling. And the fall is going to be in there before long here.
I don't like the heat. So
yeah, nobody does.
I'm ready for duck blinds and the smell of the swamp. In fact, this heat is making me smell like a swamp right now, so I'm sorry that you have to be in the same room.
That's okay.
As me right now, but you know, that's the thing. I mean, for guys like us, it's summer. Everybody else is out there fishing and Lindy rigging for walleyes and things like that and starting to cast for muskies, but I get excited when I see a pair of blue-winged teal in the flooded ditches along the roads, you know?
Yeah, that absolutely. It's just one of them things. And, you know, this is the time of year when, yeah, you're going to see them blue-winged teal and the mallards all paired up. And unfortunately, maybe one or two laying on the side of the road, but that's just kind of how it goes this time of year. But, yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't like the heat. I'm ready for it to be November and migrating waterfowl.
We did find, speaking of that, we were driving in western Minnesota the other day, and we found a blue-winged teal dead in the middle of the road. You don't see blue-winged teal dead on the road very often.
No, you really don't. It just looked like it was sleeping right in the middle of the road.
Yeah, but we did think it was sleeping.
Yeah.
That's what we'd tell the kids. Oh, it's just sleeping.
It's just gone to sleep.
Yeah, it was just sitting there in the middle of the road, and fortunately, he must have found a grill of a car.
Well, the early Canada goose season starts in September, 2.5 months from now. I can't believe it's coming up that quick. And by all accounts, Tony, it's shaping up to be a good early season, isn't it?
Yeah, it's looking to be that way, at least out here in western Minnesota. It looks like we had a good hatch of Canada geese. And, as long as the weather holds and we keep the birds around, it should shape up to be a really good early season.
So no more August season for Minnesota. I'm sure the Dakotas will have it again this year. I haven't looked. We went to North Dakota last year in August and shot some of the geese over there in the early season. You can shoot, 15? Is it still 15 a guy, I think, in the early season over there? And then 8 during the regular season, I think.
Yep.
That's crazy. So no early season for us in Minnesota, but no August early season, but we got the September early season. And when is that this year for us?
I think it's starts the 2nd of September and runs until right around the 18th is what I believe the tentative dates are right now.
And what we'll probably be able to shoot 5 a day, I'm guessing?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair guess right now. That's usually what they run it is 5 early season. It was 10 in the August seasons, but they'll usually bump it to that 5 mark.
Why do we have an early season? Tell people why we have that.
Well, for the most of the state, you know, it's to get rid of the resident Canada geese, you know, and not to get into a completely different subject, you know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing in, you know, different areas. But, you know, we're basically shooting the resident young birds to drop the population around here, and that's the whole reason for it.
Well, with that early season starting this year on September 2nd, that's going to be interesting because that's also the second day of the dove season, Tony.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be that's going to make for a whirlwind there.
Because, we guide for doves, too. That starts September 1st, and usually those first 2, 3, 4, 5 days are the best dove hunting days of the season, and we're usually pretty busy guiding doves, hunting doves those first few days of the season. So with the second day of the dove season being the opener of the early Canada goose season, some goose hunters, I think, are going to have a fun... I mean, what, are you going to throw spinners out there and your, some dove spinners out in your goose spread?
Yeah, that's going to be the tough thing, and you know exactly what's going to happen. We'll be sitting out, and we'll be hunting doves, and all of a sudden there's going to be that six-pack that's going to lock up right center into the field, and it happens every year, whether it's that early, you know, that early in the season for doves or not. But, you know, realistically, yeah, you can hunt both of them at the same time. You just can't obviously use lead shot.
Lead shot is going to be the issue for the dove hunters, and then if you're goose hunting out there and doves come in, you might have two-shot or double B or something in your 12-gauge, and... You can't shoot doves. I've done it. I shot a dove with double Bs before, and I immediately regretted it. I would never do it again. So it's going to be interesting. Anyway, Tony Crotty, our guest here on Sporting Journal Radio, talking about the early Canada goose season, just 2.5 months away, guiding with Mid-Migration Outfitters. So if you want to come out and do a guided hunt, that's something that you can do with us. Now, we probably won't know more until around August, some more details about the waterfowl regulations for this fall. But if it's like last year, probably be able to shoot 5 geese a day during the early season. And, Tony, that can be a fun day if you really get into them. We had a couple good days last year in the early season. I think it was the first 2 days of the early season we hunted the same pasture 2 days in a row, and it worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah, it really did. The birds, they had been in that pasture for quite a while, and they were... You know, they're pretty dumb then. They're, you know, you got all the little ones and they get pretty accustomed to where they're going. So we shot them out of there the first day and they got right back in there after we left. And then we went back in there the next day and shot them out of there again.
Yeah. And we shot a 5-man one day and a 6-man, I think the second day or one or the other. I can't remember, but 25 birds one day, 30 birds the second day out of the same field, exact same spot. So sometimes people are like, you can't go back to the same field 2 days in a row. Sometimes you can, and sometimes it works really well. But the best part about it, Tony, is what were those geese doing? You hear about geese in pastures. Usually there's a pond involved. Not in this pasture. What were these geese doing in there?
Well, this isn't going to help the, you know, when it comes to people eating geese.
Right.
But, you know, they were in there eating corn out of the cow pies.
they were circled around these cow pies like they were sitting at a kitchen table picking the corn out. The cows didn't even remember eating the corn. That was that. Wow. Well, it was it's unbelievable couple of days. And, you know, we'll scout geese sometimes. Sometimes we'll look for bands, too. This is kind of an interesting thing. And we saw a few bands in there. And so we got kind of excited. We might be able to shoot a band or two. We shot 20, 30, 55 geese in 2 days. In early season, there's probably 150 geese, whatever, in that pasture, probably 100 geese using that pasture, whatever it was. I don't remember the number. But you shoot 55 of them out of there, you'd think you'd have one band. We didn't shoot any bands.
No, we really didn't. And especially around our area, too, with the amount of banding that they do, you know. I would have thought we would have shot one. I think Nick Traba, he seen one land, but he was a little out of range. But other than that, yeah. No bands.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes. And, you know, so speaking about that, that's the type of numbers that you see in the early season. So talk about scouting. When you're out there for the early season, what are you looking for? What are you going to see during the September Canada goose season?
Well, usually you're going to be looking for small grain. That's almost what we consistently hunt. You know, unless you do find a pasture or a pasture pond, something like that, or... you know, there's been times where we've hunted the flooded beans, stuff like that they go into. But consistently, it's going to be wheat or oats or something along them lines. And, you know, one thing with the early season that's different than the rest of the season is it's going to be hit or miss. Either you're going to hero or zero. You know, like you said, we had 2 days. We shot 55 geese. Could have very well easily went the other direction. We could have shot none. So.
Right, because you get later in the Canada goose season when the big numbers of migrators are coming down, you might be looking for a field that's got at least 500 geese in it, sometimes 10,000, but you want to try to find some with, you know, a good number of geese in it. But during the early season, you're not going to see that big of a group, are you?
No, you're really not. A lot of times we'll be scouting less than 50 birds in a field, you know, something along them lines. And you know, one of the things is if the birds are usually going to that one food source, so if they get kicked off their water, if they something gets cut in between you and, say, where they're already feeding and it's a new fresh food source, they just might not show up. So it's always an interesting time of year, and it's fun and challenging.
So do you do anything different with your decoy spreads, maybe fewer decoys out there or a different pattern or a different setup during the early season?
Yeah, absolutely. Our decoy spreads and our hides change completely. we hunt 99% of the time on a field edge. A lot of times we'll actually hunt with the wind in our face instead of to our back, because a lot of times them early season
geese, just crazy talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you would think so, but a lot of times them birds are going to short because they're not going to want to land in the decoys like they will later on in the season. So if you hunt with the wind in your face, say on a field edge, them birds are going to come over top of you and short in between you and the decoys. So say if we wanted the birds to land 30 yards out in front of us, we'd put the decoys 60 yards away from us with the wind in our face, and they're going to come right over top of us, hopefully at about 5-10 yards above us, and that's our shot. So it's a completely different way of hunting, different style of hunting, but it can be some of the most rewarding type of hunting throughout the season.
So some people say they like to shoot them in the face. You're not shooting them in the face. You're shooting them in where the sun don't shine.
Yeah, I'm shooting them in the back.
Right. All right. Tony Crotty, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, is with Mid-Migration Outfitters, talking about the early Canada goose season. And that runs September 2nd through September 18th, and then we get into the regular waterfowl season. Ducks opening up to September 23rd, which is a little bit earlier this year, but that first week can be really good, can it?
Yeah, it really can. You know, that's usually when we have our best time on local teal, local wood ducks, and, you know, usually there's a few mallards mixed in, or, you know, gadwall, or, you know, whatever it may be. But we were usually very successful that first weekend. Them local birds are pretty in their pattern, and pretty accustomed to where they're going.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get the split seasons again this year, where the central zone that we're in will close for a week. The southern zone south of 212 there will close for 2 weeks, while hunters in the north will go straight through with no stopping. And I like it. I like the split zones. It gives us a chance at the teal and the woodies, like you said, at the beginning of the season. Then it stays open a little later for those mallards as they come down. But Tony, I'd almost be in favor of closing, you know, because we'll close for a week here. I'd almost rather be in favor of closing for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, and stay open, because it always seems like after the ducks close here around that Thanksgiving-ish third week of November, right around in there somewhere, mid-November, seems like after the ducks close, we'll have thousands of mallards buzzing around our cornfields.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that's unfortunately kind of what comes with being right next to a big game refuge with a lot of open water. But, yeah, I'm right there with you. And we're right on that border of that middle zone and the south zone. And I think that we could easily close down for at least a couple of weeks, if not a month, and we would have plenty of ducks to shoot throughout January, you know, at least. But then again, you know, there's other areas around the area that don't have as much water. They sure might not see as many ducks. So, like I said, having a refuge in our backyard is a little bit different.
So give us like a High Plains unit over right here, like you got in the Dakotas. We have to start writing our legislators, I guess. Talking about real quick this fall, we might not be hunting out of layouts quite as much.
No, a lot of times we're going to be hunting out of kind of an A-frame style blind, something that we tried out last year and we had, you know, quite a bit of success with. And it's kind of the new strategy and new age of hunting that a lot of people have been doing, and that's what we'll be doing.
Not more comfortable, and I know a lot of guys, especially maybe some older hunters that don't have as much mobility anymore, they really like hunting out of these A-frame blinds, so it's nice. Or even pits. We'll be in some pits this year too.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like you said, it's easier on the back. You can heat them up, and you can sit there and cook breakfast in them, you know, in between flights. So,
well, good. I'll be bacon and eggs. I'll take Tony. And we're going to do some time in South Dakota this year.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have limited dates in South Dakota for this fall. And if anybody wants to book them dates or find out more information, they can just go to the website.
All right. Book a hunt today to come hunt with myself and Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. Go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Joe Henry talks muskies on Lake of the Woods. John Hart will explain what happened when the feds had a deal with two nuisance wolves near Glendon, Minnesota. And Jessica Howell will let us know about some new aquatic nuisance species regulations at North Dakota Anglers might want to hear about.
Your kickoff to summer is set. Moon Dance Jam and Country Fest 11 with a pre-jam party Thursday night with Parmalee.
Oh, we must have had a good time.
The first weekend of summer kicks off
with Eric Paslin,
Dan and Shay,
and Old Dominion.
Gotta love.
And bringing down the house Saturday night with William Michael Morgan,
Daniel Bradbury,
and Thomas Rhett.
Call 877-MOON-JAM
or visit jamandcountry.com.
Moon Dance Jam and Country Fest 11, June 23rd and 24th, Walker, Minnesota.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Hi, this is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Aquatic invasive species, aquatic nuisance species, however you want to call them, they're part of our lives. And I just want to kind of get an update on what's going on with ANS regulations in North Dakota. And there was some news that came out about it that some North Dakota anglers might be interested to hear. So I asked Jessica Howell to join us. Jessica, you're with North Dakota Game and Fish?
That's correct. I'm the North Dakota Game and Fish Aquatic Nuisance Species Program Coordinator.
Well, let's talk about what it's like to be a boater in North Dakota. What you need to do. First of all, when boats come out of waters in North Dakota, what regulations are in place? What do boaters have to do?
You're going to want to walk around your boat and check it to make sure there's no aquatic vegetation on there. Drain all water from your boat so that it does include live wells and bait wells, but it also includes your bilge area. You do also need to pull your drain plug and keep those removed during transport. That does also apply to if you've got a bait well or a live well that has just a standing pipe, take those out so that the water can drain completely and leave those out during transport.
So it's pretty much like regulations that are in neighboring states.
That's correct. We're pretty similar to a lot of the other states around us.
What would you say is the most pressing concern regarding aquatic nuisance species in North Dakota?
Well, we're definitely concerned about species getting moved from where they are into water bodies where we don't have them. And so this includes anything from plants being moved to water because that can actually harbor some aquatic nuisance species that we don't have in North Dakota, as well as the young stage of zebra mussels that are currently in the Red River. So we're mostly concerned about people moving things around on recreational equipment right now. We do address other concerns such as contractors that come in to work on roads and things like that. But there's a lot of people that come into North Dakota to fish or to boat. And so we are very concerned about protecting our natural resources from these species.
Jessica Howell, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. She's with the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. I'm going to Saskatchewan here in a couple of weeks to do some fishing. I'm not bringing a boat. I'm not going to be transporting anything on the float plane back and forth. But for anglers maybe that live, you know, whether it's North Dakota or Minnesota, even for that matter, that might be traveling up to Canada. Maybe it's Manitoba, Ontario, or even Saskatchewan. What do they need to know about someone going up there?
Double check their laws. Every place has different laws and they change constantly. Saskatchewan for boaters in particular, I know you said you're not taking a boat, but boaters in particular, they started checking boats at the border and they're being very strict about what they do or do not allow into their state. I would check laws on, you know, what bait is allowed, if you're allowed to bring any in, but I would probably plan on just purchasing bait when you get there.
You talked about transporting bait, bringing bait into different states or provinces or countries for that matter. What rules are in place regarding fishermen bringing bait into North Dakota?
Right. So we do not allow anglers to bring fish bait into North Dakota alive, especially aquatic live bait. And part of that, again, is, you know, we're trying to protect some of the businesses, but overall, we're really protecting our natural resources. We do import some bait into North Dakota that we go and check. We go and check the facilities to make sure they're clean for bait. But overall, anglers shouldn't be bringing in bait into North Dakota. And again, it gets back to the types of species that they might be bringing in, and more importantly, the water that could be coming in. It's also a fish disease concern to some extent. And so What we recommend instead is that you find a local bait dealer in North Dakota. There are over 200 of them, so you shouldn't have too much trouble finding one.
Sure.
And they sell the legal species, and you know they know what's going on with aquatic nuisance species, so they should be able to get you some clean bait that you can use, whether it's leeches or minnows, or anything in between. There's, you know, a lot of folks like frogs and that kind of stuff too. So
right.
If you can find one that sells them, you can also buy those.
So let me ask you this. Are we winning the war? Are things slowing down? And what is North Dakota's overall grand plan to stop the spread of ANS?
Oh boy, that's a lot of questions. You know, it's hard to gauge success for aquatic nuisance species because essentially success is nothing, no news. And so it's hard to tell if you're winning or not. You know, I certainly think that we are seeing a higher increase in people knowing what aquatic nuisance species are and reporting that they are taking actions to prevent their spread. So I guess you could consider that a success. This year and last year, we have aquatic nuisance species seasonals that are stationed at Devil's Lake and then the Valley City area. And they travel to high use areas around the state and talk to boaters about aquatic nuisance species. They're getting some survey information, and they're also doing some inspections of boats. They are voluntary inspections, but I will say very few people turn them down.
Sure.
You know, and for us, it's a good opportunity to show people how to comply with the regulations. 5 minutes or less to walk around your boat and check for that vegetation, drain your water, pull your plugs. You know, it only takes a few minutes, but it could have a huge impact down the road. We also keep tabs of the populations that are in place and check for new populations. So we do a lot of sampling across the state, in particular this year with the potential findings in Montana. We are sampling the Missouri River system pretty heavily to make sure that if zebra mussels are in there, we'll be able to find them as quickly as possible.
The top priorities are education and maybe, I don't want to use the word enforcement at boat launches, but some sort of education at maybe the accesses, stopping the transport from body of water to body of water, essentially.
Yep. And, you know, and our law enforcement officers do a great job. They do some random aquatic nuisance species checks every once in a while, kind of like a game check, you know, where they're specifically looking for ANS violations. And they use that as an educational opportunity. But, you know, you will get a ticket, too, if you're not following the regulations that you should be.
Sure.
You know, and everything we've had in place has been there for at least a year now. The drain plug law was new for last year, so we are reminding people that is in effect.
Well, it's ANS, AIS, whatever. It's part of our world nowadays if you spend any time on the water, and it's good to stop and slow the spread of these nuisance invasive species. Jessica Hall, North Dakota Game and Fish. I'm assuming we can find out more about the ANS regulations on the Game and Fish website.
Yes, it's gf.nd.gov/ANS. And we actually are adding a reporting tool. So if you see anything that shouldn't be out there, feel free to report it online.
Very good. Jessica, thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Yep, thank you. Have a nice day.
Coming up, John Hart talks Wolves and Joe Henry's next.
Minnesota's Kempfen Chamonix event of the summer. Moondance Jam 26.
The lineup is locked.
And we're ready to rock with live. Hailstorm. The Steve Miller Band. Melissa Etheridge. Peter Frampton. The Pretty Reckless. Better Than Ezra. Blackstone Cherry. Vince Neil of Motley Crue and many more. Jammer, save $30 off a gate price when you order your tickets now. Call 877-MOON-JAM or visit moondancejam.com. Moondance Jam 26, July 20 through the 22nd, Walker, Minnesota.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, you are listening to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in, whether across the 27th station Sporting Journal Radio Network or online at sportingjournalradio.com or in the podcast too, which you can subscribe to in iTunes. You can either go into your iTunes and search for it in podcasts or subscribe at sportingjournalradio.com. And like we like to do every week, we always like to go and find out what's going on in that big walleye factory known as Lake of the Woods and bring Joe Henry on here. And Joe, of course, it's known for the walleyes, and I want to hear how the walleye bite is going up there. And you've got all the other species, including one of, I know walleye is kind of the unofficial fish, or maybe it is the official fish of Minnesota, but I got to tell you, there's a whole lot of muskie hunters in this state, and Lake of the Woods is one of their favorite places to go, isn't it?
It is. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I haven't been bit that hard by the musky bug, but man, I got buddies who, when they get bit by that musky bug, they don't want to do anything else.
Oh no, they have
to get divorced.
They have to sell their homes because they have to pay for those musky baits and those musky boats because it's an absolute addiction. These guys, that's all they want to do and fish for 8 hours a day, fish in the dark, fish in the moon phases. You're absolutely right. It's you get hooked on.
Well, not only that. I mean, when I'm at Northwest, you know, our muskie population at Lake of the Woods is in the north part of the lake. So the Northwest Angler Resorts are where most muskie anglers base out of, and some will fish Minnesota waters, but the majority will slide into Ontario and fish, you know, amongst the islands there. But it's funny because you can tell the muskie anglers, honestly, most of the time the first ones out, they're the last ones in. They do fish after dark. You know, they're the ones that, you know, with reason, if there's a storm coming in, they don't hit shorelines, man. They run out. They want to get out there and get that window right before that storm comes in that turns those muskies on. I mean, they are very, very passionate. But, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about it. You know, they're also very good conservationists in the sense that, you know, they almost always release their muskies. They're very good about having preparation with all the musky tools, the big net, the rulers, the cameras, the hook removal devices, like the clippers to break off a hook or snip off a hook if musky's hooked too bad. And then they're really, really good about getting a picture and getting that fish back healthy. And I tell you, I sure appreciate that.
Yeah, they really do care about the fish and they care about the water that fish is in. And I'll tell you what, I honestly should be a musky fisherman because it's about the only type of species you can go after where if you see a fish, you had a good day. you know, you don't always have to catch a fish to have a good day musky fishing. But boy, when you do, you know, I grew up on a musky lake and it was a much better musky lake back when I was a kid. And we would catch them while we're bass fishing. And so I never really got bit by the musky bug, but I get it. And I've gone out with a couple of guys that really are diehard about it. And that's all they do is chase muskies. And they do it as the season's open, they're chasing muskies. And I get it because when you hook into one of those fish, especially if you find one that's over 50 inches, it's a life-changing experience, if you ask me.
It's special. Well, I'll tell you. So Lake of the Woods has over 65,000 miles of shoreline, and we have, you know, 14,552 islands, underwater points, rock to sand transition, red cabbage, I mean, boulders, saddle areas. You know, we got it all. And I'll tell you this, we got a very, very healthy population of muskies, and those darn muskies have been whacking our walleye anglers' jigs like crazy this spring. I mean, they can't keep them off the line. So they're hungry, you know, and it's game on. You know, I'll tell you the other thing that's interesting is talking to some of my buddies who really do fish muskies a lot. When I talk about some of my guide friends up at Lake of the Woods who target muskies, you know, a lot of the time, out of reality, they'll certainly have musky trips, but you know, oftentimes the walleye guiding pays the bills. And then what they'll do is they'll come back and drop the customers off, clean their fish. And then in the evening, they'll go back out musky fishing just on their own. They're so passionate about it. And these guys are telling me that, you know, in Lake of the Woods, the water's stained in most areas. So you don't have to be throwing these huge, huge lures and wear yourself out. Actually, the small to mid-sized bucktails work real good this time of year with a lot of baby ducks and stuff in the water.
Oh, yeah.
Those surface lures work real good. The muskies are very aggressive towards them. It's also really neat, you know, on Lake of the Woods, when you bring your lure to the boat, you're almost always doing a figure eight because the water is stained and you can't always tell if a muskie is trailing your lure or not until it's right on top of you. So out of, you know, I guess precaution or just upping your odds, you automatically do a figure eight.
Yeah, and I've hunted. Well, I guess it is kind of hunting. I've fished with muskie guys, and they will tell you if you don't do a figure eight on every cast, you're out of the boat. Is that you have to do it. You never know. It could happen at any time. And some of those guys, they'll get, you know, 75% of their muskie strikes will happen on those figure eights. And you just have to do it.
Yep, exactly. It's a neat deal, and it's really kind of a fun time of the year because, you know what? I mean, muskie season is one of the last seasons to open up, and, you know, it's game on now, and it's just fun. You see guys and gals whipping these bigger lures and working in different areas, and it's funny. I mean, oftentimes, not all the time, but we have these such good muskie anglers come up to Lake of the Woods at times, and who ends up catching the biggest muskie in camp is some doodah fisherman who went out and got their walleyes during the day and had a fish fry, for supper, and decided to just fish around camp in the evening, casting a MEPS or a daredevil, and they catch the 55-inch, you know.
Well, that's great. I mean, that just shows you what Lake of the Woods is all about, because in the spring, a lot of times you might be jigging for walleyes and hook into a 60-inch sturgeon. And then when you get into the summer, you might be jigging in a different part of the lake for walleyes and hook into a 50-inch muskie.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. You know, you speak of what you might catch on Lake of the Woods. This last week, for whatever reason, man, walleye anglers are catching big pike. And I know both a 46 and a 47-inch pike caught on walleye gear this last week alone. And, man, no, Brett, those are big pike.
Those are big pike. Absolutely. I mean, anytime you get over 40 inches, that's great. And I did go fishing with Ben Bredigan one year. We went up to the Canadian side of Lake of the Woods and fished out of Ballard's Black Island there. And we caught more walleyes than we knew what to do with. And then we went muskie fishing and we were casting and trolling big baits and we didn't catch a muskie, but I caught at that time my two biggest pike of my life. You know, trying to catch muskies out there, you know, and this was fall, so these fish were fattening up. So I had one 40-incher that was a big, healthy, hefty fish, and then one that was probably, I think it was about 36, that again was heavier than it should have been for that length. So big fish.
Those are nice fish. And, you know, first off, Ben Brennigan is a real good fisherman and a good guy, and, you know, he knows what he's doing. You know, it's amazing when you're casting those muskie lures how many big smallmouth and big walleyes and big pike are caught on accident on a big musky lure. Makes you think.
Yeah. Well, it's just, when you got a healthy population of hungry fish, you can throw your shoe at them and catch them sometimes. Which, speaking of which, how are people catching walleyes up there right now?
Yeah, walleye fishing continues to be really, really good. And, you know, it's interesting. We got a lot of, in some areas, you know, I always preface this because when I say that we got some shallow fish going, we do have some shallow walleyes going right now. That doesn't mean those walleyes still aren't on the deep mud. They're not on the deep flats. They are. They're in different parts. There are different schools of walleyes buzzing around. But, you know, we got walleyes going in anywhere from 5 to 15 feet of water up in the shallows. And I think part of that is because some of those minnows are spawning. And they'll go up there and do some feeding. And, you know, areas like out in front of Pine Island on the south end, Zippel Bay, Long Point, and then, of course, up in the northwest angle, the Flag Island Flats area, that whole area is 5 to 7 feet of water. I think there's just a lot of food in there with a little bit of current, and those fish this time of year get in there. Also, the west side of Little Oak Island, it's all sand, and you can get in there and get a real good bite right now. So fishing's been tremendous. We notice that we're still catching fish on jigs and minnows. Some charters are using jigs and leeches, and or a jig and a minnow and a leech on the same jig. And then some are actually switching over to harnesses and pulling spinners. And this time of year, man, you know, as the water warms and the fish get a little more active, pulling spinners is very effective. You get the flash, you get the vibration, you get the color, and you get the scent of the live bait. And it's you're also covering water. It's fun fishing.
It's been real hot. It's been stormy. I know we had those big storms that rolled through on Tuesday where I'm at down in west central Minnesota down there. Has it been as turbulent up there, the weather?
It has, yeah. In fact, the storms that came through this part of the week, we actually lost some trees along, over by Arneson's Rocky Point, along the south shore. I know by Wheeler's Point we lost some trees. So it was a good storm that came through. And, luckily, I think it came through late in the day. I did hear that some of the charter boats were charter boats that came in late were bucking some pretty big waves coming in as that storm approached. But that's why they're in a charter boat, you know, and that's why they're professionals.
That's right. Yeah, I've been on some pretty big waves where I might have been white knuckling it a little bit on the way back. But thankfully, I was on one of those big launches with a captain up there that knew what he was doing. So, Joe, muskie season opens up this weekend on Lake of the Woods. Of course, walleye fishing is good. If people want to get up there, do some fishing, where do they find out more info?
You bet. Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Recently, two wolves were trapped and killed near Glendon, Minnesota. Some people may be surprised to hear about wolves near Glendon, Minnesota. Other people won't be surprised about it at all. What happened? A rancher had some calves killed. He couldn't do anything about it due to the federal regulations now in place. The wolves are back on the endangered species list, so the feds had to come in and take care of it. To talk about what the rules and regulations are and what happened in this particular case, John Hart will join us next on Sporting Journal Radio.
Minnesota's Camping Jam event of the summer. Moondance Jam 26.
The lineup is locked.
And we're ready to rock with Live, Hailstorm, the Steve Miller Band, Melissa Etheridge, Peter Frampton, The Pretty Reckless, Better Than Ezra, Blackstone Cherry, Vince Neil, Motley Crue, and many more. Jammer, save $30 off a gate price when you order your tickets now. Call 877-MOON-JAM or visit moondancejam.com. Moondance Jam 26, July 20 through the 22nd, Walker, Minnesota.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back on Sporting Journal Radio, and my name is Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in. And while it's not the most popular animal on the radar of most people in the region, it may be the most polarizing. The timber wolf was removed from the endangered species list in Minnesota in 2012. In December of 2014, they were put back on the list after a lengthy and contentious battle between hunters, animal activists, state game managers, federal officials, and the Humane Society of the United States. And while we're not going to get into that whole gnarled web of emotions, what we are going to talk about today is where we're at right now. And that's why we have USDA Wildlife Services District Director John Hart. That's kind of a mouthful. I wonder if he can get all that on his business card. John is on the show, and we're gonna talk specifically about an event that took place recently near Glendon, Minnesota, not far from the Fargo-Moorhead area. And you're saying, Glendon? What are wolves doing around Glendon? Well, I'm not surprised anymore when I hear about wolves anywhere in the state. John, first of all, thanks for being on the radio show.
You bet.
You're in the Grand Rapids area, is that right?
Yep, Brett. We're here in Grand Rapids, which is kind of centrally located for the Minnesota Wolf Range.
Yeah, I mean, you're used to having wolves kind of around you up there, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Wolves are just part of the landscape in most of northern Minnesota, and historically they used to live throughout Minnesota, but in recent decades, they pretty much just live in the northern forest area, but that range is expanding, and that's part of what you're seeing out there in Clay County is wolves just reestablishing some of their traditional, historical areas, and they're dispersing out and setting up shop in places where they haven't been in many, many years.
A lot of people are going to be surprised to hear about wolves near Glendon, but we realistically probably shouldn't be that surprised, should we?
Absolutely not. You know, wolves from Minnesota have shown up in North and South Dakota, Iowa, maybe even as far away as Missouri. So they have the ability to disperse very long distances. And so not far east of you guys, Manoman County, Becker County, down into Otter Tail County, there's been wolves in those counties for at least 20 years, maybe longer. So it's not a big leap for them to disperse west a little bit. And that's what wolves do when they disperse, is try to find an area without any other wolves. And that's how the wolf range has expanded so much over the last, 20 or 25 years, is the area where I live in north central Minnesota is pretty well fully occupied by wolves. And so they just disperse out, and a lot of times they go kind of south and west, and they end up in places they haven't been for a while. And sometimes those are agricultural areas. Oftentimes they are, and when they end up there, sometimes they get in trouble with cattle or poultry producers.
And that's what happened here. So let's talk about the incident around Glendon there. There was a rancher, Jeff Mortensen. He had some calves, I think five calves that were killed. And based on the current federal regulation that states no one can kill a wolf unless a human life is in danger, this guy essentially was helpless to do anything on his own. Had he been out there and watched a wolf eating one of his calves, legally he couldn't shoot that wolf. So he had a call for help. Did he see the wolves, or who did he call at that point?
You know, Minnesota DNR conservation officers are usually the first responders to reports of wolf damage to livestock, and or sometimes someone from our office. But in this situation, it was a DNR conservation officer who's pretty experienced with predation issues. You know, found wolf tracks. You know, based on the tooth marks and the feeding pattern on the calf, he felt like it was, you know, wolves that had killed that calf. And then he called our office, and we basically concurred with his findings and set traps and did catch and remove two wolves from that property.
Now, had he seen the wolves? Did he have an idea? Did the rancher think, yeah, these are wolves? Or did he say, hey, man, I got some calves disappearing. What's going on here?
You know, he suspected wolves. There had been sightings of wolves in recent months in that area. And so the producer was suspecting it could be wolf damage, but called the DNR conservation officer to confirm that.
These wolves were trapped before being killed. Is that because trapping wolves are generally easier than finding them and hunting them down?
Generally, yeah. Generally, when it comes to lethal removal of wolves, you know, trapping is more efficient than shooting. We do occasionally, you know, shoot some wolves in situations like this. We also work with producers to utilize some non-lethal methods to try to discourage wolf activity on their property. Generally, we try to encourage those activities prior to when there's actual losses. Once losses have started, especially if there's been multiple, you know, calves killed or livestock killed, it's harder to stop that killing without either removing the wolves or removing the livestock from the situation.
Well, sure. Once you go to a restaurant that's got good food, you want to go. You want to go back to it. It makes sense. And now that there's been some loss of livestock for this rancher, there's basically compensation payments that go out to that guy as well. Correct?
Correct. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture has a compensation program for verified wolf damage. So it's not going to pay for missing cattle. You know, sometimes wolves will actually just eat up a calf and it's not found. And it doesn't pay for animals that are just wounded by wolves that may require veterinary attention. But if wolves kill an animal and it's verified by someone from our shop or a DNR conservation officer, then they're eligible for compensation from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
John Hart is our guest. He's the USDA Wildlife Services District Director based in Grand Forks, talking about a pair of wolves that had killed a couple of calves in near Glendon, Minnesota, and then the federal officials came in and trapped and then took care of those wolves for this rancher as part of. I mean, that's just the world we live in right now, the way everything is written. That's just the route you have to take with these things, isn't it?
As far as lethal removal in response to damage to domestic animals, we're pretty much the only legal option. You know, the producer, of course, a lot of these producers are implementing some non-lethal measures ahead of time. You know, if they know that there's wolves around their cattle, they're out there, you know, increasing their activity. You know, in pastures where there's calves, calves are the most vulnerable to wolves. They're calving closer to buildings rather than out on a summer pasture. They're taking precautions to reduce wolf activity oftentimes. Some use lights, guard animals, actively disposing of dead livestock carcasses. That's kind of a big issue. You know, most people understand that the wolf is a predator, but it can also be quite a scavenger. And if you leave a dead cow out in your pasture, sometimes you're just inviting, you know, maybe one of those dispersing wolves to stop at your farm or ranch rather than have it just kind of pass on through. So there are some non-lethal things that the producer can do themselves, and many producers implement these things and still have occasional wolf issues.
I hear about people using donkeys to keep coyotes away. Will they have the same effect on wolves too?
You know, to some degree they will. There's a number of producers in Minnesota's wolf range that actively use donkeys to protect their herds of cattle, both from wolves and coyotes. And, you know, there hasn't been a study. I don't have any real data to support it. But anecdotally, from producer to producer, you know, they're recommending the use of donkeys, you know, to one another. And so when I see, you know, beef producers actively taking the advice of a neighbor or someone they know and implementing something like donkeys, I take that as a sign that it's probably helping. It's not going to stop all depredations.
Sure.
You know, I can't tell you that we've seen wolf damage at cattle operations with donkeys, but I think it's certainly one tool in the toolbox that can help those producers not experience wolf damage as much.
John Hart is our guest here, USDA Wildlife Services District Director, Sporting Journal Radio. Just a couple of minutes left here. Couple of wolves, a male and female mating pair, it's believed, removed from the Glendon area after there was some depredation on calves there. Do you think another pair could just slide into that territory now that those two wolves have been removed?
Absolutely, that's a possibility. You know, like we discussed earlier in the show, you know, the Glendon, Holly, Clay County area is within 40 or 50 miles of you know, kind of established wolf range in Minnesota. So dispersing wolves could set up shop there again. I guess we'll just have to kind of wait and see what happens. My sense is that that's getting a little bit too open for most wolves' taste, and they generally like, you know, brushier and more timbered country. But if there's enough deer there and enough kind of open space, you know, they can get along just about anywhere. So absolutely some more wolves could show up there at any time.
It's quite a story. I know it started to make some news headlines. Like I said earlier, I'm sure it happens more often than we hear about it. But that's just the way it goes, and you have to do that. And the rancher has a, you know, you can't fault the guy for wanting to protect his assets and protect his livestock there. And in my opinion, things would have been a lot easier if the rancher would have been able to take care of this on his own, of course, but that's just my opinion. And, you know, no offense as a federal guy, but I'd love to see the wolves back in the hands of state managers. And yeah, it sounds like maybe there might be some plans for that to happen again in the future. I suppose you don't really know what's going on. You just kind of do what they tell you.
Yeah, the legal status of the wolf has gone back and forth, as you mentioned, several times in recent years. And so we're under, you know, the wolves are protected under the Endangered Species Act right now. And in Minnesota, wolves are classified as a threatened species,
right,
which allows folks from our agency to take wolves in certain situations. But there is the possibility that they would get back under state management in the future. And so that's certainly a possibility.
John, I appreciate the time here and all the information on the wolves in Minnesota. John Hart, USDA Wildlife Services District Director. Thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
You bet, Brett. Thank you.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.